Hey everyone, welcome to our first self-care episode. Someone once said that vulnerability is the door to connection, and these honest conversations are just attempts to talk through what I am currently working through in life, in hopes that maybe something shared here will help you in your own life this week. I'm joined by my dear friend and human design expert, Sage. And on this episode, we talk about acceptance. How do you accept that one thing you never thought you could accept? Give it a listen and let me know what you think. And welcome back to How I Got Through It. I'm so glad that we're doing this together and having these conversations because there's so many things that's happened since last year for both of us in terms of like learning, growing, being a student again. Mm-hmm. And in my life too, a lot of things have happened personally for me. I moved cities. I started really peeling back the layers of things going on in my life. And also my dad passed away. Mm-hmm. And so that has plunged me into an entirely new phase of learning, of understanding that relationship, and then understanding what that relationship meant in my life. Mm-hmm. And even previous to that, preparing for his passing, like having all the conversations that I wanted to have, questions and things that I just really wanted to know, because I felt like it helped me learn more about myself and where I came from, my lineage, my ancestors, that kind of thing. Something that I kind of been thinking about this morning is acceptance and letting go. When I think about it, I'm like, well, of course you have to accept what's happening in the present moment, because what else is there, right? All you have is the present moment. Mm-hmm. And even though I know all of that to be true, there's something about accepting what's happening that my brain does not like.
Mm. Yeah, the mind is funny.
Yeah, it is. I try to like read up on this every morning. I try to, I guess, peel back another layer of this. And I came across this author named Mo Goddard. He's an engineer and ran special projects at Google. He wrote this book called Solve for Happy. It's happiness from an engineering perspective. And he says that happiness, your happiness, can be documented down to a mathematical equation. And that equation has to do specifically with expectation and perception. So he gives this example of rain. And rain, you know, in itself has no inherent value. But if you have to water the plants, say Monday and Wednesday, right, every week, and you wish that the rain would fall, you know, on Monday and Wednesday, and you kind of expect that the rain would fall on Monday and Wednesday, and it does fall on Monday and Wednesday, then you become happy, because what life has done was it met your expectation in your mind. But with the same example of rain, if you expect to go to the beach and you want to have a great beach day and lay out on the beach and the rain falls, then life doesn't meet your expectation and therefore you're unhappy. But the secret sauce to all of this is the way that you comprehend things and your perception and the way that you're understanding what is happening and what life is throwing at you. So he says that your happiness is really dependent on those two things, right? Like expectation and perception. And so I'm really starting to think about my perception, and that's kind of where I am in the study of all of this, literally at 8:30 this morning where I left off. Right. And just kind of thinking through that and thinking through, because now that he talks about happiness, it makes me think of unhappiness, right? Like if there's any friction that I feel in my life, obviously it's maybe discomfort or unhappiness. So there's something about my expectations and possibly the way that I'm perceiving what's happening that is not matching. And something about that makes me unhappy.
Hmm. Okay. So coming back to the act of acceptance, being in a state of acceptance, and at least as I have started to witness my own life, when I come to a point of acceptance, it automatically allows me to let go. So what has been showing up in my life process, I would say most immediately, it feels like everything is communicating with each other. So if we're looking at like, you know, mind, body, soul, like there is this synergization of that energy to be able to say, oh, okay, yeah, we're all in agreement here. But what came up was this thing about relationships. And then, oh my goodness, I have had such a deep reverie experience over the last like 3 days. A lot of stuff around female figures, the feminine essence, and where a lot of resistance has been stored. But one of the things that was coming up most is this aspect of feeling I am unworthy of experiencing both quality and quantity of connection. And when I started to reflect on that, I was seeing how in my childhood, I felt isolated. And that I recognized then would trail into then my adulthood experiences, where then when I was looking at, let's say, female figures, I felt like I would experience kind of two camps, where there'd be some women that would be in my life that would then express the nurturing side of what my mom would express to me. And then there'd be other women that would express the controlling, do as I say, because I know better than you. And those would be the expressions that would kind of leave me internally torn, because then I'm like, well, who to listen to? And then the joke really is, I'm only here to listen to myself. I actually have the agency to do the things that I know that are correct inside of me. So that's why coming back to that point of acceptance is that when I was able to then accept it, I was able to then let that go and to recognize, oh, I actually can experience the multitude of expressions, and to recognize that none of them are better or worse than any other. They're literally just expressions. And by their very nature, they're neutral. But it is coming back to how I am actually ascribing meaning and engaging with them. But yeah, so I'll pause there and let you.
So you're letting go of your perception. What are you letting go of?
That somebody else is in charge of my own happiness and my own satisfaction and what it is that I want to be able to experience in my life. So my mom showing up and she knows better than me what... who, what, where, when, how am I supposed to be moving through this world when that's not her place? She can ask me questions. She can be curious about, okay, how things are actually happening or going on. But at the basis of it, it still comes back to what is most correct for how my body decides to express itself in the world. And again, this has also come up with regards to like, you know, my sexuality being gay and, you know, her ascribing her own meaning to it, that, okay, well, you need to change your ways because the way in which you were living is unacceptable, really to her, based off of her own conditioning around her religious beliefs. But then recognizing that even within that, she had to come to her own type of acceptance to recognize that she still has love for me as her son and she's willing to support me. But when it comes to my soul, she has other perceptions on that.
I think you bring up a good point, though, about perception. And what I was hearing when you were speaking about your mom is that a lot of her perception comes about because of, you said religion, but I would say also culture and society. A lot of our perceptions are formed because of where we grew up and the type of parents that we have and the school that we went to. And I think that that's where it gets a little bit muddled, because then you're starting to think in the parameters of right or wrong.
Yeah.
When you, and that's what your mom was doing. She was thinking this way that you are being in this world is wrong and there is a right way and you're not doing the right way.
Yeah.
And I think that I have let go of right and wrong last year, but I still can't kick all the different aspects of perception. And I think, you know, maybe the unraveling of that will happen when you think about 30 years plus of conditioning and unraveling the way that your brain was formed using the data that it was formed with, and you kind of have to unravel that. I think that that takes time. I think it's probably, now that I'm talking through this with you, it's probably such a bigger task and undertaking than I ever thought it would be, you know? Mm-hmm. And then also that tying into the unraveling of the passing of my dad, because that is a perception in itself, right? Like that whole era of my life was just the way that I perceived it. And so I'm kind of thinking into that and thinking about how, in spite of all of this, I can accept, funny enough, my expectation of what happened with my dad. I actually expected him to pass away because he was not doing well.
Right.
So my expectation was met, if you think about it in a way. That sounds really bad, but it wasn't so jarring in that time when I found out that he passed away. And we had talked about this, I think, the day after, because the sadness that I feel is charged with love. Like, have you ever seen those food warmers? It's this metal tin and there's a flame underneath it. And this is so silly, but what I think of is that flame is the charge or the energy that heats up the food. And the thing that's charging all of my feelings in regards to his passing is love. It's like, I loved this person. They're not here anymore. This person was one of my best friends, I would say. And that is where the sadness comes from. The amount of conversations, like, you think you and I talk a lot, Sage? Me and my dad would talk for like an hour and 50 minutes, mm-hmm. like in one sitting, up to very recently. You know, when you have a romantic relationship, it's different. It's like you have to let go of the memories, but also you have to just like completely cut this person off in your brain. Mm-hmm. Here is different. It's like, I don't want to cut this person off because I love this person. So the letting go is like a different, it's like a different flavor of letting go, you know?
Yeah, no, I definitely get you on that front. I think as well, like, just even with that letting go, and even when it comes to, let's say, relationships on a whole, right? Because then I can look at the mirroring effect. We have been conditioned to kind of use our minds to seek out imperfection and to see, oh, well, this is a problem. This is an issue. This is something that, quote unquote, needs to be fixed. But inherently, the only thing that really just needs adjustment is usually just our perception of what has actually been presented in front of us. I was actually talking to a friend of mine yesterday, and something she described, which was this difference between co-creation with life, or seeing life as being an ally, versus when we are trying to manifest or bring something into shape and form from a state of fear or avoidance, right? So the example was essentially speaking to, you want to be healthy. That's a neutral statement. You want to be healthy. Now, how we imbue the frame of healthiness can look like a couple of different things. It can look like, oh, well, I desire to actually have like radiant skin that is smooth in complexion, and that I feel like, you know, just like luscious in my body as I'm moving through the world. That's one way of expressing healthiness, right? Then another aspect could be, oh, I'm taking these supplements because I don't want to die. Mm-hmm. So you see how, like, again, it's like, how are you then charging those experiences based off of the neutral point that, oh, I just want to be healthy? But it really then comes back to, what is it that you want to charge your energy towards? Like, where you are actually putting your attention for this thing to materialize, for the experience to unfold.
Yeah. Yeah. Perception has a lot to do with the charge that you put behind it. And I guess I'm wondering how you start to accept, like, I guess, a romantic relationship that's gone south, right? Like, because, you know, once you know something to be true, you can't unsee it, right? And you know this, it's going to keep nudging at you for a long time. So either you accept it and you let go and you move on, or you live in this illusion of what you think your life is.
Right.
And I don't, I don't ever want to live in an illusion of my life. I think that's the thing that's the charge, you know, that's the thing that drives me in a lot of aspects of my life. That's why I'm always peeling back the layers, because I'm like, what is the truth of this thing? Mm-hmm. What is the truthiest truth here? The truthiest truth that I can find. Yeah. It's really a lot of what I think about. And so I'm at the point where, how do I accept something? And while you haven't dealt with the same exact experience, how do you start accepting? Because now you have to go back in the archives and really see something that you saw through rose-colored glasses, you know? Mm-hmm. So you have to go back in the archives, change that whole thing, and then start letting go, take all the steps to letting go, and then somehow get to acceptance.
Mm, okay. So at least this is what has been showing up for me through this acceptance. And again, coming back to presence, is the first point, at least for me, is always the neutral point. You have to then come to a state of neutrality. So when you are experiencing either a memory or something that is then presented in your physical reality that has a certain charging behind it, one of the things that I lean into the most is breathing. First and foremost, like, I'm really allowing myself to take in the experience. So even if I feel that kind of jarring effect, like, I'll give you an example. At one point in time when I would actually be seeing my past partner driving past me as I'm also going in the opposite direction, and it would cause this initial like jolt in my body. And I had to experience that enough times to recognize, oh, Sage, you're not breathing. You're literally seeing this thing and you are freezing and locking that energy inside of yourself. You're not moving it. So again, it's being reinforced and like almost like baked into the cellular structure of my body because I'm not being present with it, because it's jolting me back to like previous memories, situations, all these different things. And then when I got to the point of like, oh, okay, I'm seeing this thing, life has given me an opportunity to breathe. And then I'm like, oh, breathe it in fully. So then I would then just do a deep inhale as I'm visually taking in the experience, and then deep exhale. And I went through that enough times that in any time that happens where we happen to be passing each other, I don't feel that electrical charging in my body. I'm like, oh, okay, that's okay. This is just neutral information that this person is passing. But it was before I was then ascribing a meaning to it. So let's dive into this now. This is starting to look, at least through my lived experience, when I am presented with, let's say, a memory of something that I found to be upsetting, I'm able to look at the individual and I'm able to recognize, oh, I have ascribed particular meanings to this person based off of the experiences that we had and then how I interpreted the situation. This gives me the opportunity to recognize, oh, well, this was neither a good thing or a bad thing. It was literally just information that was presented in front of me. And I go through this visual expression inside of my mind where I am sensing inside of my body whether or not I feel like I'm putting them on a pedestal based off of particular actions, or if I'm putting them down, and then I bring them into equanimity with me in the sense of we are level.
I think just a couple of things too.
Yeah, go ahead.
When you saw your ex driving past you,
yeah,
you breathing through that experience was the acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
This is happening and this is okay. This is happening and this is okay. And breathing through that, the next time it happened or the next time you saw something on social media or whatever, it didn't sting in your gut because of that breathing that you did. And like, listen, for some people, it might take breathing 50 million times, you know, but eventually you actually do get there. Like, it's science that you do get there. And there's something about that too, like giving oxygen to the right energy while your entire body feels like it's in chaos. I think there's something so beautiful about that, something so spiritual about that, that you're giving oxygen to your soul, to your gut, while your entire body is in disarray. It's like you're going to the middle of a storm and you're just being the calmness in the middle of a storm.
You got it. Perfect imagery. My goodness. Yeah. I just want to plug this in where I have noticed these little synchronistic loops where even as we are communicating, I feel like there is this quantum entanglement of you being able to pull out particular examples based off of like our kind of co-lived experiences, because you've already used two examples that I was smiling at because you were talking about the food warmers. Mm-hmm. And you know that I went to a Lime yesterday for my friend. It was actually a couple of people that are all Mayborns and their birthdays were around the same time. But they had food there and they also had food warmers. And at one point I had to put out the food warmers.
Oh my gosh.
So it's interesting that you brought that up. And then here it is. There was also this TV show that I started watching, and they literally had a scene where he walked into a tornado and was talking through the tornado.
Oh my God.
Something about this kind of like telepathic message. And I was like, that's funny that you're now utilizing two different examples based off of things that I then visually saw and experienced in my life only yesterday.
That's incredible that you had those two things happen to you. And there was one other thing that I was thinking of when you were talking about, oh, the perception. I actually saw something also in my mind when you were talking about the meaning that we ascribe to what is happening. Mm-hmm. I imagined a rope that you're tying around this experience with an anchor on the other end, and you're throwing that in the ocean and you're just staying stuck. Yeah. And I feel like when you said that, I felt like I just need to unravel this rope and let this ship sail. Like, you know,
exactly.
It's like funny how your perception and the meaning that you tie to something can keep you stuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Even with my past partner, this has happened a couple of times where they would end off the conversation with something like, thanks for always being there. And I would feel triggered inside of that. So this is the story. You always expect me to be there, but when I need you, you're not there. And so this tied into the experience as a child growing up, where it's like my mom always expected me to be there whenever she needed me for anything. So if I don't have the energy for something, well, you better find the energy sort of thing, you know, just the usual sort of commentary to move you from a state of fear, guilt, shame, whatever the case may be, because those are the tools that were immediately available. And then to see how I was basing my worthiness off of how available I was for other people, but not being available for myself. Yeah. And not being able to turn inward to actually see, oh, my body is literally telling me I viscerally do not have energy for this. So it's okay. And I can communicate this to the other person that I don't have the energy for this right now, but ask me again at another time. And similarly, it would also feel like this sensation, and this is where the mental narrative again came in, and that made me feel like I am disposable. And that's as far as my worth goes. And so that's how that required, at least internally, to start to see this firsthand of like, oh, this is the story that I'm unraveling. This is what hit me like a bolt of lightning yesterday. There is a difference between acceptance and then the tolerance of something. Mm. And so I was playing with this yesterday because I have actually seen this sensation inside of me that said, oh, when I accept something, I also have to tolerate everything that somebody sends towards me. There was this internal conflation that said, oh, when I accept this person as they are, this also means that I have to tolerate all of their behavior. Incorrect. And when I uncoupled those, my goodness, I just felt this sense of like, oh, wow. Yeah, I've literally just been doing this to myself the entire time because I had to have these experiences to be able to communicate to others that you can accept an experience as it is to bring it to a state of neutrality. But then after that point, you don't actually have to continue to put yourself back in that same loop over and over and over again. So it does come back to perception, how we are viewing something, and then coming back to our own sense of self.
So are you saying that you can accept a person, but you certainly mm-hmm. don't have to tolerate all of their personality traits or characteristics?
Correct. Correct.
Hmm. That's interesting. That doesn't cause any friction at all. I didn't know I was doing that until now, but I've been doing whatever my instincts say to do. And there's no fear. There's a lot less fear. There's maybe some right. fear, but there's a lot less fear. So in very long-standing relationships that I have, if they said something that maybe I have tolerated before, like it's a joke or mm-hmm. whatever, now I say, that's not funny, you know, yeah. and I nip it in the bud. And then I let the chips fall where they may with that mm-hmm. relationship.
Yeah.
That's what I mean when I say there's no fear. The fear of losing that relationship is not so great that I will not speak up for myself.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And that is exactly it. And so, yeah, just to bring back up my mother, I love my mother, right? I really appreciate the way that she has shown up. Like when I am then starting to really look at the consistent kind of players, as my mom would say, when I was young growing up, she would say, oh, the cast of 1,000, meaning, you know, just the usual people mm-hmm. that you kind of see circulating into your lived experience. And that was something that would come up where it would feel like this sensation of, again, if I didn't accept her in totality and then also tolerate her in totality and to recognize these are two, they're similar. They feel similar, but they're very distinct things in their own right. They're unique in their own right, that I somehow will be excommunicated, like just exiled as a result of it.
Mm-hmm. Can I just say something about your parents too?
Yeah, yeah.
I am writing this article right now, and I've been doing a lot of thinking about, obviously, my father, but parents in general. And yesterday I wrote down and I completely forgot that I knew this. But I know a lot of cultures also prescribe to the same thought that we as souls choose the parents that mm-hmm. we know we actually need in this lifetime.
Yes.
And apparently you get to know the good and the bad and all that stuff way before you get here. And mm-hmm. you still decide to choose these two people to be born to because you know that this is what you need in this lifetime, those lessons or that love and that support. And two things can be true. You can be getting lessons as well as being very supportive.
Right.
I just was thinking about that when you were talking about your mom there and the fact that you do love your mom. And I believe that's true, right? But at the same time, there's certain things that we need to learn in this lifetime that only those two people can give us.
Yeah, I know. I 110% agree. Because even my mom had told me that when I was young, I've told you about how I got the name Sage. So that's why I feel like everything has this. I'll just say it for here as well. But yeah. That's why I feel like there's this aspect.
I forgot that story. So tell it.
Yeah, no problem. And so my mom told me before I was born, she had a dream where she went to like a monastery. Like it had this essence of maybe like a Tibetan monastery or something like that. And she walked into the monastery and she saw a monk there, and there was like a playpen with a couple of children in it. And I was one of the children, and the monk guided her over, reached into the playpen, picked me up. And she said I was in this kind of like blue onesie winter jumper. And the monk told her, you'll name him Sage and you'll spell it S-A-I-G-E. And then she woke up, wrote it down on a piece of paper, and then I was born subsequent to that. And then she said that like maybe, I'm trying to remember, she said like a year later or 2 years later or something like that, she was in, I think it was Goodwill, and she ended up finding the same jumper and put me in it, right? And so it was like one of those like synchronistic moments. I was like, whoa, this literally just like lined up exactly as that. But then also, she told me that when I was young, I said to her, seemingly, that I was looking down from heaven and I saw you two, meaning her and my father, and said, I'm going to be born through them. So I know that there is this energy of like, oh, there is a certain decision or predestination that is kind of wound up into our lived experience.
Oh my God, that's incredible. I don't think I've ever heard that story now that you...
Really?
Yeah, I've never heard
like that. I told you.
Well, I also think it's super cool that your name is Sage, but Sage with an I, because half the battle of this freaking lifetime is just either getting rid of the I or learning how to balance the I or,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You know, you're spot on with it. And it's funny because even when I like look at my name and I see the I in the center, I'm like, oh yeah, it's kind of like sandwiched in between these dualistic letters on either side that are, you know, coming and assisting in the unraveling and the expression of life. But there was something that I was going to say with regards to my mom and that. Oh yeah. Okay. So this is one of the things, and I recognize that this keeps coming to the surface. And I was noticing that there was this hesitation or resistance internally for fear of, I'm going to say two layers. One layer, which I feel is a surface layer, is like putting my mom on the spot. If my mom ever listens to, I love you, mom. And then there's this other layer that it scared me, that I think that that's really what that was. So this actually needs to come out. Oh, wow. Okay. That now linked to a lot of different things. So my mom, as I've said, recognizing that she has also come out of particular lived experiences, and there is something that would come up as a child where if I was upset about something and I am attempting to communicate that I feel upset about this thing or this thing is upsetting me or angering me, it would be met with this level where she was attempting to assert dominance. And I do think that there is this conditioning that has come up that because we are in male bodies, or that I am in a male body, there is this assumption that the only way to treat to me is through aggression. That the only way to get through to me is that you have to be aggressive with me. And this is something that I would have seen as a child growing up, where my mom would do this thing where if I was upset about something or something wasn't maybe going my way, but again, I wasn't equipped with the language to communicate past a particular point, she would say something like, you know, I'll call like child protective services and like just ship you off, right?
Wow.
Like they'll just take care of you, sort of thing. And that created such a visceral fear that even now, wow, actually, yeah, give me a second. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see how all of this is coming up. So that would bring up that sensation of fear. Like I am, again, disposable, right? Because I'm not behaving or because I'm not doing what you say without asking me how I actually feel about the situation, that has created so much heartache, if I'm going to be honest. That has brought up a lot of pain, because I think what it would bring up inside of me is, you brought me into this world. I was birthed, you know. I look to you for support and nourishment and I guess protection, and really just at the core of it, love. And to feel like, because I'm just having a different expression than what you feel is maybe controllable, you're ready to threaten me with this shipping or sending off. Like you're not welcome. That's what it felt like. You're not welcome here anymore just for being who you are. And that brought up a lot of anxiety inside of me, where it would be like, I need to be this quote unquote good boy. But even within that, recognizing that even my body is like resisting against this conformity. And so being able to observe that combativeness, and then this aspect of even at such a young age, oh, well, you can experience homelessness, right? That you don't have a home to come back to. You don't have a place to actually feel like you belong, because your own mother has said, okay, well, you know, you're being bad behaved. And I know that she was attempting to do that to get me to do what she needs me to do in order for things to be easier on her at that given time. But I recognize that it deeply impacted me, because then for a while, I could not figure out why I would have this fear of homelessness, like fear of having no place to belong, no place to like settle and feel like, oh, I'm safe here. Right. And I recognized, oh, this was actually rooted right back into very early childhood, to feel like I never had a place to belong. But I also accepted for what it is at this given moment, because all of this needed to come out, right? Because now I'm able to actually see the thread of how all of these things kind of came into shape and form, and to recognize at the end of it, I am the one building home for myself, and that I don't need to continue to play into the child version of me that felt like, and truly at that point in time, didn't have a lot of agency to be able to vocalize or speak up for himself, you know? So that's something that was there in the mix. Okay. Definitely welcome your insight.
Well, I think building a home and a belonging for yourself is a very lonely endeavor, I think, for everyone. And I've been in moments where it has brought me to tears too, thinking that it's wonderful that you have agency over your life to do this thing with yourself, not by yourself, but feels very isolating. Then when you think of the reason that you are in that situation or feel that way, and you think about your parents and the people that are supposed to give you that support and that nourishment in terms of emotional nourishment, if you will, and they don't do that, or they make you feel like you don't belong, or that you have to act a certain way in order to belong, mm-hmm. that I don't really have words for that. I think that it's a different kind of hurt that I think is incomparable with anything I've ever felt, especially when you feel like you don't belong. It's a loss of possibility as well, like the loss of possibility of when you see other kids and they have this great home and these great parents and, you know, that support everything that they do, and they don't have to deal with this type of chaos. That makes you feel like, well, what about me? Or like, why not me? And then when you hear something like, oh, your soul chose these two people, you're like, why would I choose this? No. This sucks. Big time.
The dark humor, right?
It's like, right. Jokes. Not many people go this deep at all. In their entire life, they do not ever think about their own belonging. A lot of people are in survival mode. Like they create a home because they don't want to be homeless, and they're surviving. But they never think about what belonging means to them, where they found their belonging, where they haven't felt that they belonged. The moment I feel like I don't belong, I'm out. Like I am out faster than you can see me gone. And that's something that I've only learned in the last 2 years, because home and belonging just really strikes a chord with me, like deep in my freaking body, you know?
Yeah.
And I feel it so deeply. But what I will say is this: what has helped me is knowing where my worth comes from, mm-hmm. and what I tie my worth to. So I had this whole long discussion with my therapist, and one day I was like, I don't know about my worth, because I feel like it can be here today, gone tomorrow. It feels very fickle. And maybe that worth wasn't the right word, but I just felt like anything can throw me off this horse, you know? Mm-hmm. And I just felt like I wasn't grounded or tethered to anything. I didn't know where you tether yourself to. I just didn't know. And she said to me that you are worthy because of the mere fact that you were born. And then that kind of sounded like bullshit to me, because I'm like, what if it was an accident? You know, like, what if, you know, this makes no sense. And she says that the Buddhists teach there are infinite amount of possibilities where you could not have been born and then also come to full term and all of these things.
Right.
And the mere fact that you have and you are and that you're here in the world, it is that something in the universe or something in life itself or your trajectory knew that you needed to be here and that you needed to experience all of these things that you're going to experience, even though they're so extremely painful. Mm-hmm. Maybe I would venture to say a little bit of what we were talking about before. Maybe it just feels as painful because of the meaning that you're ascribing or the rope that you're tying yourself and anchoring yourself down with.
Yeah.
And once you kind of loosen that, you don't have to unravel it just yet, loosen it up a little bit. Maybe then you can kind of see and feel your worth. So these last couple of weeks, I've been just going through life trying to feel my worth. Like, and also knowing that I belong here because I am here. And just telling myself that in my brain. When my brain somehow finds a way to say you're not enough, and I feel like for women and men, this happens a zillion times a day. All kinds of things can make you feel like you're not enough. You go on social media, it makes you feel like you're not enough. You're watching a TV show and there's an amazing couple, you know, in the show, makes you feel like you're not enough because you're not in that situation. All types of things make you feel like you're not enough. But I just physically tell myself, I am enough because I am here and I'm experiencing this. I'm enough because I'm here. And somehow, weeks of telling myself that, I have now started to believe that. I don't know if you know anything about meditation, but it kind of is similar to that, where it talks about, I actually heard it from Rick Rubin. He says that the first part of metta is all to do with the I, the you. And you think about changing yourself versus changing the planet. So the first year, your meditations are to do with you as an individual. The second year, it is to do with the community. The third year is to do with the entire planet. And he talks about specifically what you say. So I kind of took that approach and I applied it to my worth. And if I am to really believe that I am worthy of being here and worthy of being on the planet and worthy of experiencing, even when someone makes me feel like I don't belong, I'm even worthy of experiencing that I have to physically tell myself I am worthy. And now that I've kind of gotten that into my blood and my DNA a little bit, I'm exploring that. When I'm walking in the morning or the afternoon, I look at the trees and I tell myself, I am worthy of being here and I belong here because I am here and I'm experiencing this. So I don't know if that helps you any, but that's kind of how I've approached and kind of tackled that belonging and grounding and also dealing with when people make me feel like I don't belong.
Yeah, exactly. No, I 100% agree with that. And I think even as you were saying what you were saying, it brought up this like imagery in my mind of like worth almost being like a horse, but you're like riding with it. So it's bucking, but you're just like allowing yourself to flow with that sensation, right? Because then when we become too rigid, then we end up being easily shattered or being easily thrown off. But when we're able to actually just allow ourselves to feel the ebbs and flows, especially for both of us that have like open heart or ego centers from a human design standpoint, a lot of that energy is just about recognizing that you have nothing to prove. You're not here to prove your worth in this world. We are here to just be the samplers and observers of those who are doing so and who are built to actually kind of lock into their I-ness in this lifetime and to follow their heart's desire. Versus for us, it's more like, okay, let us flow through this. What is this sensation actually bringing up inside of us? Where are we sometimes overestimating or overvaluing, and then where are we undervaluing? And to be able to recognize like both expressions are okay, and then we're able to kind of just flow between them, you know, just like water.
Yeah. And one thing too, when you're talking about a horse, I feel like your horse might be in a really small corral. It might be nice to imagine letting your horse run into a much bigger corral, because now it has space to explore, to see the imagery around it. and to not be so caught up in a smaller thought process or framing, right? Framing is really what it is. Framing, exactly. That's exactly what a corral is. It's like framing.
It's framing. Exactly.
And opening up that framing and let that horse just run free, right? Mm-hmm. Like experience everything, smell the flowers, see the grass, you know, give it space to kind of run free and explore. And I think that would help a little bit. And one thing I want to say about parents is I think our parents were doing the best that they knew how to do with what they had. Mm-hmm. And what they had was very limited, especially if you have parents that are born in the Caribbean. I think this goes for parents everywhere, though. But just from a history perspective, a lot of our parents, all they were thinking about was surviving. Now they have a family, and now they have to survive with a family, you know?
Yes.
And making enough money to pay their bills. And I was just writing about this yesterday with my dad. Sometimes I think about the way he was a father to me. And listen, he wasn't perfect, but it's a friggin' miracle sometimes when I think about it, because his mom died when he was 6 years old. And then right after his mom died, his father left. So where would he have seemed to be a parent, right? And right. Then when I start reframing even the things that maybe I thought he could have done better at being a parent, like some of the experiences he could have been better as a parent, I'm like, yeah, but where would he have learned this? He wouldn't have learned it. And that is that corral that I'm talking about, that framing. I opened it up a little bit bigger because I was able to see him holistically and see the experience holistically and go, well, the moments that he was a great parent actually are a friggin' miracle that that even happened. You know? So just to kind of bring it back to acceptance, how are you now going to go forward and accept this that just kind of came up in this conversation with your mom and these feelings?
Yeah, well, I think ultimately I feel quite neutral now in the experience. I was actually just going to bring up just an additional memory of what was then expressed, like from when I was young. So it then kind of turned into when I felt like my mom was unfairing me, right? So then I would flip it and I tried to flip it on her. And when I felt like she was unfairing me, then I would say, oh, well, I'm just going to leave. And then she'd be like, okay, well then go. And then I would do this thing where I had this like little suitcase and I would pack like, you know, a couple of clothes, a stuffed toy, that sort of thing. And then because we lived in an apartment building, I would like, you know, go outside and I would walk down the corridor and then I would go down to like the elevator. And I recognize like when I was thinking back on those memories, because it happened a couple of times, is that I would be waiting for my mom to actually come outside, like into the hallway to like ask me to come back, and she never did. So then I ended up just going back inside. Mm. And so I recognized that then that created this neural pattern of, oh, okay, well, this somehow I am truly disposable because there was no care that was then shown on her side. I was looking for the proof that my mom cared, right, and that she cared about my feelings. And that when I attempted to, you know, use protest behavior by threatening to leave, that somehow this would then lead to us being able to mend the fence or whatever. But it usually was just left with me having these sort of unresolved feelings internally and her just kind of going about her business. I guess maybe not being entirely attuned or aware of how she's impacted me at the time. So I think at this point, the very fact that I can speak to these things and just to come to a state of recognizing like it really just is what it was, and recognizing as well within it that her choices and behavior was neither worse or better than anything else. I can actually just see it on an even keel as just neutral information that I was presented with. And now to be able to just acknowledge that, oh, I can actually care for myself and I can ensure that my needs are being met and supported when they need to be. And I can also communicate this to the people in my immediate surroundings. This coming back to the acceptance and tolerance. When I recognize, and again, I'll just plug this in, as a fourth line individual from a human design lens, we're always here to experience the reciprocal nature of things. So I can say through our communication, it feels reciprocal. I open up, you open up. I'm able to dive into something, you're able to dive into something. And it is this sensor that kind of goes off that says, oh yeah, we are creating this kind of vortexing of our hearts together where I feel like I'm opening up to you as much as you're opening up to me. Mm-hmm. And when there is that level of confidantship, then that allows me to now feel safe where you're concerned. This has led to then other experiences where then I'm able to then look at the people that I've had in my life where when I open up, it's shut down. And then I was playing a sucker for punishment because of the conditioning that said, oh, well, if I want to be accepted or if I'm to accept this person fully, then when they shut me down, I need to see past that as opposed to seeing that as a check engine light that says, hey, this is where this stops. And that has given me the opportunity to see, oh, I am here to only really focus on the people that I feel this natural reciprocal flow is occurring. And so even through our conversation, and it's kind of funny, like how everything is kind of quantumly entangled, you know, the whole purpose of relationships is not to be in a relationship with somebody who does not trigger you, but it's more about being in a relationship where you feel safe to be triggered and to feel safe to actually dive into different parts of yourself. And this is something that I experience where you're concerned. You ask a particularly pointed question and then it allows me to start to sift through that. And I think because when we engage, it never really feels like you're, how would I put this? You're doing it from a place of curiosity and care. And I can feel that versus doing it from what can sometimes, at least in my other experience, feel like a level of maliciousness in an attempt to
exert power.
Yes. Yes. You got it. You got it. You got it. I would just say this has led to recognizing where I feel like I experience home and belonging. And I would say that through our connection, you have definitely been one of those waypoints for me to feel like, oh, here is somebody that I can talk to and that I can open up about this. And I also don't feel like there is this pressure to open up or this pressure, tell me everything about you, da 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 da, or you need to do this or nee, 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 nee. I don't experience that. So I just want to say thank you for showing up as you are.
Well, thank you for saying that. Well, I have no words, first of all. I think it's really important to me that people feel loved in that experience that they're having with me, or acceptance, and not feel like there's some secret agenda going on.
Right.
And so I'm glad that you feel that, but also I'm glad you said it as well, because I never know how the other person is having the experience, but I'm hoping that they feel included. There's no pressure. I never want anyone to feel pressure around me. I think that acceptance helps when you have people that are in your life that are a soft place for your heart to land.
Yeah, I felt that one. Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it really does help. I think that that's maybe one of the biggest services that you can do to the people around you. You know, be that soft place for their heart to land. And that doesn't mean that you have no boundaries. That's what I think intimacy is actually, you know, like intimacy is where I can say what is at the core of me, no matter how painful, how hard, how happy it is or whatever. And you are that person, those feelings can land and it be okay. And I think if anyone takes anything away from this conversation and just acceptance in general, maybe that's just the one thing that we can all do, right? Is be the soft place where someone else's heart can land and still honor yourself.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee it, if your mom was a soft place where your heart can land, because I'm listening to you and you standing out in the hallway, you're testing, do I belong? Do I belong? That's what you're doing as a child.
Yeah.
But now that's great because you get to go out into the world and be that person for someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I agreed. Think that's priceless. I feel like this was an incredible conversation.
Yeah, seriously.
It was deep. It was curiosity. It was discovery. You know, back in the day when people would sit around a campfire and just discuss things at the end of the day, you know, and this podcast can be your campfire. Like, how do you think about this thing? Or you're asking me how I think about this thing or what experiences I've had.
And to also recognize even within that, you know, that the outcome is not as relevant as the journey. Yeah. And the fact that we are giving ourselves the opportunity to share these things, yeah, to share our hearts and to see what has been stored in there. And yeah, just allow others to see that and to feel it as we are moving through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. Thank you so much for spending your time with me, Sage.
Thanks as well. Definitely appreciate it.
All right. We'll talk soon. Bye.